I've got the spots, the sickness. There's the twins in my brain.
The first cyclocross races of the season are behind us, which means this is the perfect time to launch our newest podcast, Cross is Boss, the podcast that will keep you busy during the road off season. Joining me on this winter adventure is my domestic Dieter. Welcome, Dieter.
Thank
How
you.
Are you?
I'm good. Cross season is back, so I'm always good.
When I introduced the idea of making a cyclocross podcast series with the two of us, you were immediately enthusiastic. And what exactly do you love about cyclocross?
Well, the biggest difference with like road cycling is that I think, it's always an hour full gas. There's always something happening. It's always a good watch, and I always watch literally every race. So,
A true fan. Dieter, definitely. We needed to do something special for this very first episode of Cross is Boss, and that's why we invited a special guest. He comes straight out of the mud in Maasmechelen, where he achieved his World Cup personal best record. Welcome, Cameron Mason.
Hiya, thanks for having me.
How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Yeah, just finished my first double weekend of the season, and it's going good. Excited to be back in cross.
I saw on Twitter you're learning to speak Dutch using Duolingo. If you want to, we can do this episode in Dutch as well.
Maybe not yet, but I'm working on my Dutch for post-race interview. So if I ever get a big result, then I'll do my best to do a little bit of it in Dutch. but yeah, I think the Duolingo is... It's probably not the best way to learn. Real life is better. But now I'm on a real Belgian team. That's, there's no choice. I'm going to have to learn more. So that'll be good.
And you give us a little sneak peek. Is there something you learned already?
Massive pressure.
It's
all the
okay
little
if you
things
don't want to.
Just all the little things around cyclocross, like the Zandbak and the Trachten and the Bollekin and that's all the things I've learned for the last 4 or 5 years of coming to Belgium. So those are the easy things. The hard things is the kind of more complicated language.
No need to be shy. We keep the rest for your first post-race interview. No problem. Was it always your dream to become a cyclocross rider?
I think my dream was to become a bike rider, and I think whatever discipline that was going to be, it would be. It just happens that cyclocross has kind of turned into my main discipline, the one where I perform the best and the one that I end up enjoying the most at the time. Because those two things do go together for me as someone who's like competitive and who is somewhat results driven. When I think like 12-year-old me racing all the disciplines, I don't think I was ever sat with a little diary saying, oh, I want to win the Tour de France when I'm 25, or I want to be cyclocross world champion when I'm this. I wasn't that type of kid. So actually just 12-year-old me would be happy just to be continuing doing exactly what he was doing, which is racing bikes every weekend.
Did you have any idols back then?
I would watch all the cyclocross racing the day after, because they would just randomly upload onto YouTube with all of the Flemish commentary still, because in 2010, 2012, there was no GCN or Eurosport really kind of carrying them. So you'd find the kind of dodgy streams online or the YouTube uploads. I would get to know the top riders Sven Nys, Bart Wellens, Kevin Pals, and start to kind of work out what the sport means. And then as soon as the kind of Van der Poel and Van Aert battles started, that is all I've really known from really following the races. And now I'm in the same races, which is pretty cool, and they're still doing their battles. So it kind of goes full circle.
You're on the first row experiencing it.
I get free tickets.
All right, let's dive right into last weekend's action. Cameron, you started at Telenet Super Prestige in Ruddervoorde, but in a new kit, because 2 weeks ago you changed teams. It was the end of your story at Trinity Racing and the start of a new chapter at 777. Is that the way to say it, or?
I think you would say Cyclocross Reds now, and their title sponsor is 777.
All right. How do you look back on your time at Trinity?
Really good. You know, like when I look back at the rider I was when I joined Trinity, I was, you know, just at the end of my first year of U23. I'd spent quite a bit of time in Belgium, kind of learning and developing. And when I joined Trinity with Tom Pidcock and Abby May Parkinson, like I was just a totally different rider, and I did have so much to learn. But I realize even more now that the environment that they created with, you know, experienced Belgian mechanics, people like Kurt Bogaerts in management and coaching, and then with riders like Tom Pidcock being at the top races, like, yeah, there couldn't have been a better environment as an English speaking person to really go full gas into cyclocross racing. And without that, you know, I wouldn't be able to join a team as big as Cyclocross Reds. Because, yeah, there are quite a lot of steps to get to that point. Maybe for a Dutch or a Belgian rider, there are less steps involved because you're exposed to the racing earlier, you have those connections earlier. But for me, I needed that kind of middle step, which was Trinity. And yeah, I was on Trinity for maybe a bit longer than people would expect, or even I would expect, but there's always things that get in the way, whether it's COVID or injuries. Like, yeah, it doesn't take many of those little setbacks to kind of push you back. And the great thing about Trinity was that there was never a huge pressure to really like, right, as soon as you're not U23, then you're gone. They gave me that little bit, you know, that extra kind of 6-10 months just to get this level and to make that step. So it's been, yeah, I'm very grateful, obviously, Trinity.
You say it was all about gaining experience at Trinity. What were the major lessons you learned?
Just the lessons of how to be a bike rider, how to operate day to day, all the little protocols and just simple things. Like, it really is, yeah, being a bike rider is simple, but it's lots of small things that you have to do really well that kind of contribute to being the top riders. And that, you know, I was learning that directly from the best, like living with Tom Pidcock and seeing that nothing that he was doing was out of this world. He was just very good at controlling what he could control. And then when he got to the races, then the bike riding spoke for itself, and his, you know, talent and his experience from hundreds of races and riding his bike since he was 6 years old. You know, there's no secrets, really. It's always a combination of lots of things. And that was really important for me to see firsthand. And you see the hard work firsthand as well, like the fact that there are no easy ways to the top. All the top guys are putting in the work and trying to do everything to their best ability. So, yeah, good lessons in that.
So Pidcock gave you a lot of advice.
Yeah, I mean, just naturally, like you turn up to a brand new race. He's already been there 3 times, maybe. You go do recon 3-4 laps. You get ideas of bike setup, tires. We also had Belgian mechanics who were ex-riders. So you could turn up at a race and they would already know exactly what to put your tires at. You would go around one lap and be like, yeah, that's probably the pressure I should ride. Just things like this, like so many, just helped to accelerate my development, really. Like all of this stuff is possible on my own setup or with my dad or with a lower level setup. But the easier you can make it, the better, because those things do get in the way of your performance. Like they're just steps that you have to make. And that's something, as a British rider, you are just disadvantaged. You're not exposed to that from such a young age. Like I think about guys like Niels van der Putte and Ryan Kamp, you know, they've been at this level since they've been, you know, they've been riding tubulars, for example, since they've been 13, 14, maybe. They've been riding sand courses since they're 14. And all of these things add up, which is why more often than not, it's Dutch and Belgian riders at the front of cross. So.
Is Pidcock still watching your races at this point, like last weekend, for instance? Did he say you could have done this better or that was really good? Or
not that I know of. Maybe when he comes back in December, he'll see. I'm sure they're all watching that. They're all watching their backs because they know I'm coming. So that's what I like to think. But no, we'll see.
So you know he will be back in December?
Probably, yeah. I mean, I just made that up, so don't spread rumors.
You don't know in which race we'll see him?
No, I actually don't know, but if I was him, I would. There's no need to rush back. December makes sense if I was him, considering what he's done this summer. And I just saw that Van der Poel put out his little kind of mini schedule, and I think it will be something like this. With what's coming next year in Paris, I don't think this is the cyclocross season to really go crazy and do lots. Wout is maybe a little bit different because I know especially how much he loves the cross, and it probably gives him more energy than takes away sometimes because he's just so enthusiastic for it. So we'll see if he does more than Van der Poel.
What convinced you in the end to join the cyclocross Reds?
Yeah, so for me, the cyclocross Reds, it's obviously one of the top teams. They have a lot of experience with just being women's team in the last 3-4 years. Obviously, previously under different names, they had riders like Shani Vermeersch and others, and Witsa Bosmans, and yeah, lots of riders under that, one of the Rudolf teams. But also the multi-discipline options that it's going to give me is going to be really important. So yeah, I'm excited for that next year, and that will be more connected to the Alpecin side of things.
So does that mean we will get to see you in the Alpecin de Koning team as well, or is that an opportunity?
Yeah, the opportunity is there to ride with the development team. So that's really exciting. Obviously, they have a really nice road program beneath their World Tour team. And yeah, there is also off-road options in a team like that as well, with gravel and mountain bikes. So it really keeps those doors open, which is really important for me, because this year, you know, I had a really good cyclocross season, and then I went into the summer and kind of took on gravel a little bit more. Well, basically started my gravel career this summer and realized that I have quite a nice ability to perform over long durations, and that's even without training so specifically for it. So I think with more road training approach that I can get from a team like this, that can really kind of just bulk me out and bulk out that base fitness that will help me in both road and gravel. And then we will see if that has an impact on my cyclocross or not. Obviously a lot of good cyclocross riders, you know, respond really well to that road summer. Others don't, you know, guys like Isabit don't really need it. They just do a really small road program and then they go full gas for cross. But for me, I'd like to have a really good, strong summer on the road and gravel, and then see how that affects a full cyclocross season.
Yeah, because you're like 62 kilos, like low 60 kilo, I think, or?
Yeah, about, and in cross, it's more like 63, 64, but yeah.
And you perform, yeah, that good in races like, I think Dublin last year, really flat mud race, and you performed that well. I think you also at your watts open then, and you have, yeah, very big watts, certainly for your rate. So there has to be also in the summer on the roads, in climbing races, you also have great abilities, I think.
Yeah, I think it's a tricky one with cross, because as soon as, yeah, it's nice to talk about power and weight, but there are just like 50% of the speed could be attributed to skills and how you put the power down and how you manage the corners. You know, if there are 30 corners in one lap and you can be 1 second faster over each corner, like that's just crazy how much time you can make. And I think that is where I'm getting lots of time. But I do think I've got ability, like I'm quite good at high torque. So I can, that's well suited to cross, but maybe not as well suited to road. Depends on the type of climb. Like if it's a steeper climb, then it's a bit more high torque. If it's a higher speed climb, it's not so good for me. But yeah, we'll see. I think that the issues I've had with road in the past is that I've just not been well trained enough for it. I wasn't fit enough to deal with the kind of kilojoules. So I had the peak, but I couldn't do the peak in the final hour. And the gravel this year, as I've ridden into the gravel more, I've realized, you know, there is I do think that within me there is an ability to manage those kilojoules and then to be able to do really good power in the final hour of a race, that type of thing. So I think that's what I have in my head really for things that I can improve in roads. So and the steps to get there is relatively simple. It's train more and race more and just get exposed to that stimulus more often.
Okay. Cameron, about next season, are the Olympics somewhere on your mind? Is that a priority?
Not really, just because I don't have enough points and there are better British mountain bikers than me at the moment. So I think GB will have two slots to go to mountain bike, and that will most likely be filled with Tom Pidcock and Charlie Aldridge, that's how the system works. Yeah, I think it makes sense for me to go in this kind of more road and gravel direction with the kind of opportunities I have and with the kind of physical attributes I have at the moment. Like, I know it's similar with the road. I know that if I really do full focus on the mountain bike, I have the ingredients to be a really good mountain bike rider. But what's hard to see sometimes for fans is that, like, unless you are one of these kind of once in a generational rider, to be good at multiple things that's when it gets crazy. That's when it gets incredibly hard. And why I have even more respect for guys like Mathieu and Tom is that, like, with just limited preparation, they can already be, you know, 95% of the way there. And you see, like, Tom at 95%, he can podium in a mountain bike World Cup. Obviously, if he wants to win world champs, he does a really specific preparation. And I think that's a credit to the mountain bike scene, is that it's, you know, no one wins easy in mountain bike. You have to put in that work. And then it goes the other way, but it doesn't go the other way really for a cross, because all of these guys they can just turn up at a cross race and they'll be fine pretty much. So that's kind of their bread and butter, you'd say, in the UK is a cross.
Would you like to try it in 4 years, or will the focus still be on gravel and then cyclocross?
Depends. Like, a lot changes in 4 years. I'd like to get my cross to a point where I'm just consistently one of those top guys. I think I need maybe one or two more seasons for that. We'll see. You know, in 4 months, we could be talking about how I've just consistently top 10, top 5 every race, and that would feel a lot more like locked in for me. And at that point, then I can start to think, like, okay, how do I diversify as an athlete a little bit? But I kind of want to get the basics right first before I make things too complicated with all the disciplines.
One more question before we talk about the races of last weekend. Your name on social media is Cameroony. Does that mean you're a big Manchester United fan?
No, it's kind of my mum and dad's nickname for me. It was like Rooney, Cameroony, and Looney Tunes, just like all that kind of all those things. So yeah, Rooney is like my family nickname, which is basically coming from Cameroony. But it's funny when you turn up, I do it the same as well, because that is the name you read every time you see a post. People just come and say, "Hey, Cameroony," and it's actually, I quite like being called Cameroony, so it's quite funny. And fellow racers or stuff just saying Cameroony is good.
Great. Your first races for your new team, they have been great as well. Let's begin with the Super Prestige round in Overijse. The weekend started with some bad luck for you. Can you tell us what happened?
Where? In Overijse?
Ruddervoorde. Sorry.
Oh, there you go.
You had a flat tire, right?
Exactly, yeah. It wasn't actually the first lap. It felt like the first lap, but we'd done one lap, and then in the second lap, I hit a concrete edge. I knew exactly what I'd done. And the funny thing was that when we did recon, I came back to the bus and I was chatting to Niels van der Putten, and I said, "Oh yeah, there's this one line where the rut goes directly into a concrete edge. You probably shouldn't take that." So that was me telling everyone not to take this line. And then I go and immediately puncture. So do as I say, not as I do. And I just front wheel punctured quite far from the pits, so I lost quite a lot of positions. Got going again, kind of took my breath, and then got on with it and just didn't give up to the finish. So once I made contact with the front group with, I think, three to go, I was kind of on my last legs, and I was like, right, now I can just see what I can do with this. And I surged. I actually tried to surge as far to the front as possible, and then it immediately sped up, and I was just back to on my limit. But it was nice to know that I could have a problem and still kind of battle with these guys. But on the last lap, to be honest, it didn't feel as much of a battle. It felt a bit more like just get to the finish, which was still 10th, which is fine actually, and shows what I can do.
Because I just checked on Strava, and in the mid part of the race, like lap 4, 5, 6, you were constantly riding 10 seconds faster laps than Isurbit and Cole, the front group. So that shows your amazing engine.
Yeah, it's nice confidence, but you know, I watched the race back too, and it's always that little bit more stop start in the front, and I know that doesn't actually suit me as much. Like the fastest way for me to get to the finish is with an individual time trial and just to do my effort and do my pace, and actually obviously some courses do suit that, like, you know, the big heavy courses where there's no draft, where there's no surging, that suits me, so that it makes sense that when I just knock out good lap times, I could do a good ride. And one of the things I have to improve on more is that kind of bunch racing stuff, like having the initiative of knowing, like, okay, there is nothing. I heard Lars talk about the Maas Mechelen track, and he was saying that actually there were only really two key sections, the rest of it was just riding. And to have that more like racer's mind, where you can really like dissect a course and be like, right, I don't need to be in the front here, I don't need to be thinking about this, and then having sections where you're really, really on it and thinking about it, I think that's something I can improve on a lot.
How did you feel about the result in the Redevoort in the end? Were you disappointed or quite happy with the legs?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, even last year I'd be stoked for a top 10 at a Superstie C1. So no, it was cool. And I know the company I'm in, I know the guys I'm riding with and the guys who are just around me. So, and yeah, you saw it as well with Felipe Orts, did something similar to me. And I was actually in the race, I kept looking behind and he was like 15 seconds behind me. And I was like, did I just catch him? Have I forgotten, or is he coming with me? I was like, because he definitely started ahead of me. I was very confused where he was, but he had also punctured in the start of the race and then came all the way back to the front, even better than I did, because in the final he was really fighting up there. So no, yeah, it was cool. It was good for confidence. Just messy. That's just what it felt like. You know, when you're on that kind of Pac-Man kind of catch-up game, you know, it's quite hard to judge how well you're going, because you're in a different race to the guys at the front. You're doing your own race. And then when I got to the front, then I didn't really have the minerals to actually do like race with them, but that's fine. I'll try it again another time.
It's not a shame. After a fifth place in Overijse last week, you're seventh in GC right now. Is it something you might focus on the coming weeks on that GC in Super Prestige?
Yeah, I don't know. I still haven't really worked out that. Like with this first block, there's going to be also the first X2O, and I was going to use that as a bit of an idea to see what is possible in a series like that. The series is a funny one for me. Like in the past, I've never really focused on anything, and still in my head, I would much rather have a podium at one race than finish top five in a series. Like that would make a season for me. Maybe the more kind of long-term cross riders, they have, you know, a series result really does show how good they are. But I still feel like I need to break through with that top result. So I think there's more value in me kind of focusing on an individual result. Same with World Cup. Like I'd love to race every World Cup and have a nice World Cup overall, but it doesn't make as much sense as, you know, skipping a couple and then focusing on one a little bit more than the others. I think that would be a smart thing. And you're seeing it with Femme, like she can't do everything. You're seeing it with Thibaut, and yeah, everyone is, it's that funny part of the season where everyone's kind of being quite cautious with their, like giving out their programs, because people are seeing what other people are doing. Like I just saw the start list for Koppenberg, and there's that little bit of like, oh, you know, I've done well in these two series, so I'm actually going to start to sacrifice this one. And oh, I didn't go to America, so I have to kind of think about this. And I saw Swake was saying already, like, he just straight up said, like, I actually don't care about any series as long as I get a jersey. And that's, I respect that, because one jersey would make your whole season versus, you know, second place in X2O or something. So it's a funny one. But yeah, just as I work out, like, this will be probably my longest and most full cross season. So I imagine by the time we get to February, I'll be up there in a couple series, and we'll see if there's something I can do then with program focusing on something. We'll see.
I'm looking forward to that. Dieter, you've been hyped about Kevin Kuhn for 2 weeks now. He ended up in fourth place in the Ruddervoorde. Is he in the mix for more the coming weeks?
I have the feeling he has the engine to, like, consistently ride in the front group. But in all the races we saw, I think Ruddervoorde, where he finished fourth, he was also making a lot of mistakes. He has the technique, I think, because he jumps over he jumps the barriers very well, but he makes a lot of mistakes, and then he always needs to get back on, and he's always has the legs to do that, and he has to do that like 2-3 times per lap, so that's like 20 times in the whole race. I have the feeling if he gets the flow better, he has the ability to really ride consistent top fives. I don't know how Mason looks at that.
Yeah, I mean, he's just one of the top riders. Like, you can't really say anything against him because he's always there. Quite, like, his really good start always puts him in a position to race for a podium, and that's a really good a good attribute, because immediately you're putting yourself on the front foot to do a good ride, and most courses need a good start. It's then kind of how he translates that into a good result, and that you just see that sometimes it's a little bit better, sometimes a little bit worse. But if the worst side of it is, I don't know what he did in Maasmechelen, I think he did puncture, so he was,
yeah, he also punctured, he, yeah,
yeah, 10th place, yeah. So that's what I mean, if 10th place is a bad day and 4th place is a good day, then that's quite a nice swing of results, especially for a team like I don't know what they're called now, Wanty or Tormans. I don't know what
it's a hard name.
Yeah, for a team like that to have two guys kind of in that 4th to 10th range, that's pretty nice for them. But yeah, Kevin, he's just a top rider. And what you were saying with the skills, like, I think it says more about the top guys than it does about the kind of mid-level riders, maybe, that their ability to hit lines, like, 95% of the time, that the success rate is just so impressive with these guys. They, while on the limit, they can just nail the rut, they can nail the sand, they can nail the corners, and that's something I'm aspiring to as well, is to just improve my consistency with technique as well, because my peak technique is really good, you know, like that one time I can rail the corner, like, I'm like the best in the world, but you need to do that every lap. While you've just done attack, or while you've just been dropped, or, you know, it's all those things. You've got to do it while on the limit. And yeah, I'll just get better at that with more experience and more training.
Celine Alvarado, she took the win in the women's race in Ruddervoorde. She already has an advantage of 3 points on Annemarie Worst in GC. Can we say she's going to take that GC win easily if all goes well? Because Fem van Empel will skip a few races, Puk Peeters isn't there. What do you think, Dieter?
I think Alvarado is, like, outside of the three youngsters, that's Van Empel, Peeters and Van Androoy, still best. So if nothing goes wrong, like if you crash one race or you puncture on a really bad moment, yeah, you have almost 0 points. So yeah, then it's already tough to, then your whole lead is gone. But if all goes well, I think Alvarado still is, yeah, consistently better than Worst. So,
Cameron, do you guys have the time to watch the women's race before it's your turn to race?
Yeah, definitely. It's part of our routine. We do our recon and then we come back to the bus and get changed and put the race on the TV. It's like, definitely watching the first few laps is important, just to see if there are any specific pinch points or technique, or, you know, if everyone goes into first off camber and they all fall off because they have the wrong tires, then we know what the deal is. And then also we're all just fans of the sport, so then we just leave that on in the background, get some music on, and just get excited for our race. So no, it's good. I'm enjoying watching all the racing, and it's nice to, you know, it is my teammates and my colleagues, so it's good to keep track on how they're all doing.
After the bad luck on Saturday, you achieved a World Cup personal best in Maas Mechelen. Congratulations on that 8th place. Can you talk us through the race in Maas Mechelen?
Yeah, it was an incredibly short start straight. It felt like, you know, 10 seconds and then you're immediately into the field. And with that dangerous first corner, I was just happy to survive. I haven't had the best luck of just like following the wrong people or there being a little crash. And so I was just happy to make it through. I probably held about the same position I started, which is fine. Not good enough to really be front group from the first few laps. I think to come from third row all the way to the top 10, you need to have an exceptional start. So with just an average start, then you get what you get. You're kind of in the train of riders. And I had a bit of a plan of, obviously, I knew that the course was going to be a little bit of a procession because the main line is so defined that coming out to overtake is quite hard. So I knew I was going to try and be a bit more patient in those first two laps and let the race come to me. Probably 95% of the top 20 can do a really good first two laps. But then quite a lot of those guys, then their pace drops off. And it's at that point that I can kind of surge through, and which I did to kind of be more inside of the top 15. So still battling with some guys. And then midway through the race, I was actually, when I watched it back on the TV, it did look like I was in the front group, which is nice, but it didn't feel like it, because when you're 8-9 guys back, it only takes one section for you to be gapped by 15 seconds. And then you're really a disadvantage. So I think the little 5% I was missing on Sunday I could have done with that to really like plant myself in the group. I think top 6 would have been a nice place to be on that track, to be able to actually see what's going on, to react to things. But where I was, just behind like guys like Felipe Orts, and last week, actually, he was like yo-yoing all around the place because of his mechanicals. But just there, like, I didn't really feel like I was racing with the guys like Isabit and Van der Haar. And then I think with 3 to go, you saw it was really more broken up as the pace went up again. So it's kind of 1s and 2s. And then I just worked on holding my own pace as consistently as possible, ticking off all the key sections, trying to keep good technique, look after my bike, look after my tires. That resulted in 8th, which is quite nice.
What was your start position in Maas Mechelen? Was it line 2, line 3?
Third row, so the middle of the third row, which is almost second row if you kind of move up a little bit. But they were being quite strict on riders not overlapping. So I think the rule is that you shouldn't overlap, but my experience in Belgium is everyone just overlaps anyway. But they were being quite strict on keeping people back, which makes sense because it just gives everyone a little bit more space.
Do you have the feeling that start position hampered your eventual results a little?
Yeah, definitely. Like, yeah, I have to, there is more risk involved for being further back. For example, like, I clipped in, started to do my good start, my sprint, and then Jens Adams pulled his foot out, for example, directly in front of me. And if that had resulted in a crash, you know, then that's game over. So just little things, they all add up. Those battles into corners with guys who you're actually not even going to finish with later. It's part of that first lap thing, but some guys are better at it than others, and I would say I'm not the best at that start lap kind of battle and aggression, but that's something to improve.
The women's race was won by Fem van Empel, which wasn't, of course, really not a surprise, although Celine Alvarado said after the race that she thought she would have been able to follow van Empel for a long time, but then she had problems with her shoe. Do you believe that, Dieter?
No. She battled with Annick van Alphen the whole race because of her bad luck. Otherwise, she would have finished second before Anika, I think. But now she had to really battle with her. And she obviously went full gas on that in that battle because Van Aert was really good yesterday. And she didn't get closer or even stayed at the same gap with Van Empel. So Van Empel just kept pulling away. So even if everything went perfect, Van Empel is just so good. That's not like talking bad about Alvarado just because she's also really good. It's just that Van Empel is so insanely good.
You showed you are a real cyclocross expert last weekend because you kind of predicted the Annick van Alphen podium.
Yeah, it was normally you would expect like Alvarado worst Van Empel podium. I expected Van Alphen to be like fourth, fifth in the race. But if worst had a crash in the start and like that, Van Alphen is already third. And if I saw worst riding, I think Van Alphen, to be honest, would have finished third anyway because she was really strong. So yeah.
Next up for you, Cameron, is Koppenbergcross and the Europeans. Is that correct?
Yep.
After last weekend, that's kind of a tough schedule, no?
Yeah, it's heavy, and I noticed that today. but it's all planned for a reason. I'm a lot fresher than my competitors who have been racing already. Like guys who have been to America, they struggled, I think. You know, thankfully for them, the Overijzer weekend was just one weekend. But if you go to America, come back for Overijzer, and then there are guys who did midweek races with Kimra de Nacht and things. So there's just that constant compromise of races and series and everything and travel. Euros is a bit of a complicated travel, but you know, I'm just trying to control as much as I can control with recovery and planning, and it's something I've got a lot better at. You know, where I'm living, I'm super comfortable. I have a really good soigneur who does all my massage, recovery, meals, bottles. Like the difference that makes with back-to-back racing is just crazy. So
you don't feel too tired yet after last weekend?
No, mentally. I think mentally looking after that is the most important thing. Like if you feel fresh, motivated and hungry mentally, then that can override the physical side. I know my body can handle this amount of cross racing. But if it starts to feel mentally fatiguing, then that's when I would need to kind of go back a little bit. And the good thing about Euros is it's got that little extra kind of buzz about it. It's not just a standard Belgian race. It's got, you know, there's a jersey on the line, it's with the federation, it's in a different course that I've never done before, and those are all really good. I respond well to those type of things. So yeah, and it's also got a relay, which I'm keen to do, so I'm doing that on Friday as well. So it's a three race week this week. So
that means that it's five races in 8 days for you.
Exactly, but one of them is only 7 minutes or something, so easy,
but still
good opener.
Yeah.
What are your expectations for the coming races?
Just if my level stays the same as where it's at with the courses that suits me better, then that's going to be great. If it goes up, then even better. Maybe my body will respond positively to the racing and it will start to already absorb that kind of full gas effort that is really hard to replicate in training. So that's all just based on if I recover well enough. And if I can recover well enough for Koppenberg, then I don't see Euros being an issue. The double weekend, it feels heavy, especially with those two type of crosses, like very on and off the bike, some real deep sections where you're really just cranking on the bike. It wasn't like a weekend where you have, I don't know, a cross like St. Niklas or something where it's all very fast and flowy and things. It really wasn't that. But it was good to get the first double weekend out of the way, and these are two really good races for me coming up, I think, so exciting.
Is the Koppenberg Cross one of the toughest races of the season?
Yeah, I mean, it depends what maybe type of rider you are. Like, all the top guys can perform on every track normally, and then it's just small differences in conditions and courses. To be honest, I would look at a course like... don't know, maybe even like Deegan or something, and go, oh, that's a really hard course for me because I'm maybe not as well suited to it. So I'm actually really excited for Gothenburg because I know that when other guys are struggling, I'm just kind of getting going and enjoying myself a bit more. So no, it's good. It's a good one. Apparently the course has changed a little bit, but I looked at the map this morning and it is just like a few extra turns in some bits. So I didn't see a massive change in the structure of it, which basically means still the main climb. And then a kind of, well, the main climb actually starts all the way at the bottom because you do half of it on grass and then you do the rest on the cobbles. So that is kind of the kind of defining part. But I always remember the other kickers are, you know, you're actually getting the gap on those ones. And then when you get to the long one, then it's working out like, are you going to maintain the gap or are you going to let the gap come down and that type of thing. So once I see it, then I'll get that kind of back in my head as well, how to race it.
I was looking at the start list for Koppenberg and Lars van der Graag, Iserbiet and Nijs. Those are guys who have a big chance to finish on the podium. And you have like Van Turenhout, but he was sick yesterday, I think. He DNF'd. And then you have Pim Bronner, who I feel like is about the same level as you. So I reckon if you have also some luck Wednesday, you can finish really close to the podium, like fourth, fifth, sixth, maybe. So I don't know how you look at that.
Yeah, that would be super nice. Like, it's all relative to your competition. Pim, you saw yesterday how aggressive and how in good shape he was. Like, he was just so keen for it. And Pim's another one of those riders that he goes 100% all until he totally blows up. And if he blows up after the finish line, then you know he's done a really good race. So, like, he just goes until he can't anymore. And sometimes he extends that all the way through the race. Sometimes it only lasts two laps. So, no, he's a really dangerous one. And then you realize that, three of those guys are from the same team with Thibaut and Nace, but the team tactics won't be quite, well, they won't really be anything on this track because of how selective it is. There's always going to be another line. There's always going to be a different pace. You can ride the climbs and there's basically no drafting. So that's good for me, basically. I like that when it's a little bit more honest and you can just get down to doing good lap times. So we'll see.
So the way I understand it now is that the courses with a lot of elevation gain suit you the best, or?
Yeah, it depends. Like, sometimes when there's lots of elevation gain, the courses then you do lots of small punches, and on the small punches I'm not actually that good. The power needs to be a little bit more sustained. So if the power profile goes more towards like 1 minute power, then that helps me. If it's down more at like 20 seconds, then my pure wattage can't really compete with guys like Nace and Isabit. Whereas that gap comes a lot smaller when it goes up, and that you see that on random tracks actually. So actually that's why Dublin maybe suited me so well, is that the connection of like one long straight into another long straight ended up being 40 seconds instead of with a very small amount of recovery, and that full power section suits me quite well, even though it's flat. Whereas even in Overijzer, I was really getting put on the limit on some of on that one main steep climb in the woods. You saw me in the coverage just getting gapped there every lap because the peak 10 seconds, I just couldn't really compete. Whereas then when you did the cobbles and started the next climb, overall, that was a more like a 50 second 1 minute climb, and that suited me a lot better. So it's just those little bits of changes in the profile, but I do have to work on that punch, because if I can have the punch and then that kind of extended power, then that'll be quite dangerous, I think.
You already said you will do a lot of races the coming winter. What races are you looking forward to the most?
Dublin again. It's a really cool one. Nice. I mean, the Irish crowds are really good. It was weird that the feedback from that track was so positive. Like, it doesn't look much on paper, just a sports field with one sandpit. But the way that, because the terrain was so consistent, like from one side of the course to the other side of the course, it opened up so many line options. So when it all got muddy, riders could, you know, really choose their own line. And that always creates good racing. And I think that's why Mass Mechelen yesterday didn't look so good, was because there was no defining kind of, there was no like, oh, this rider's going to take this decisive line that means they have to work harder, but they go more straight. They go more direct line. There was none of that. It was all really small margins. So yeah, Dublin's a good one. I'm keen to do Val d'Isol in the snow. I think that could be quite a good one for me if I've got the good snow skills. And then just the whole of the Christmas period, I've got good memories from last year. Some really nice races in there with Chiavra and Herentals and Baal, you know, really nice races. So yeah, be a good season.
All right. If Dieter doesn't have any more questions, I have one more, the last one. When will you be a happy man at the end of the cyclocross season?
I'm already happy now, so just more of this, more of the same. I'll be happy with. Excuse me. You can cut that out. yeah, just more of the same. I think there's still some things to perfect and to get in the right place. But there's a lot of races to come. So I think if I just keep doing what I'm doing, then there'll be some nice things coming, because there's always, the great thing about cross is there's always another weekend. The world moves, the cyclocross world moves very quickly in a good way and a bad way. If you have a good result, then people are kind of forgot it a week later. But if you have a bad result, it's the same. So I like the tempo of the cross season. It's just always evolving and everyone's always just talking about the next race, which is exciting.
All right. Dieter, you good?
The Euro Champs, maybe. I don't know how much you know about the course, but I read that it was a very tough course with a lot of altitude meters. So that's also, I don't know how long the climb is, but that's maybe also one that should suit you really well.
Yeah, I've heard it's very physically tough in the dry and the wet, and then it's going to be those conditions that affect how much group racing it is. In the dry, I think you've seen groups of 10 riders going around fighting for the win. But then in the wet, obviously with the elevation, that makes it a lot more selective. So yeah, I'm hoping for some rain and see if that makes things a little bit more selective. And yeah, I'll do my best, and yeah, it'll be good. I'll have Thomas Meen on the start list as well, on the start line with me from Great Britain. And he's a top performer at the main races, so yeah, That'll be good.
Who's your favorite for Sunday?
I haven't really thought about it. Isabit likes to deflect it all. I see all of his quotes, and whoever wins the last race, he's like, oh, I see him as the favorite. Meanwhile, he has actually shown to be the most consistent cross rider so far this season. But you know, a major championships is different. They're not going for just another podium, they're going for the win. But Swake's kind of trajectory looks pretty impressive. Like the ease and speed that he rode back through yesterday with a puncture was ridiculous. So he just kind of teleported back to the front and then got third. So I don't know if Mass Mechelen's the course for him. And obviously there won't be any kind of Belgian tactics there that'll kind of do its own thing. So it'll be exciting. It'll be cool. And if it is a real front group race, then maybe I'm the type of person who could benefit from people looking around. You know, Kuipers will be there 100% because he's really good at the key races. And once you add up all these people with Kung and Orts, then you're talking about 12 guys, and that's pretty exciting.
And it.
All right. Best of luck, Cameron Mason. Thank you for joining. That was it for today's Crosses Boss episode. Thanks to the audience for listening. And for those who are watching on YouTube, consider subscribing. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya. I've got the sports.